friends, you're listening to The Flannelly Show, Irish Radio Network USA, irishradio.com, worldwide. I can pretty much tell you, you haven't heard this tune in the background, because it was only released, actually, yesterday. And I could tell you about it. Listen to it, like, just for a minute or two, and then we'll talk to somebody we all know very well. Hint. She has, she's been a whistle player, not just any old whistle player, but top-selling whistle player in history, having sold more than 500,000 solo albums. And, she has awards and citations. There are four, five, six pages of them here. I'm not going to go into that other than say a couple of them are very significant. Like, for instance, she was bestowed one of the nation's highest awards. She was chosen for the Ellis Island Medal of Honor Award. With a couple of, fairly good company in that one there, because 60 U.S. presidents, for instance, ambassadors and senators and congressmen and congresswomen, and on you, Sheridan, tell me, I'm only annoying the people. What? Excuse me, maybe I'm just annoying you, but I am about to welcome a very, very good and dear friend of ours, the one and only Johnny Madden. Johnny, you're very welcome.
Well, lovely to speak to you again, Adrian. How are you? Great to talk to you and all your listeners.
You know, I would have guessed that if we were thinning out our musical archive data here, it's hard for me to believe that this is only your 17th album. If I had taken a wild guess, I would have said, geez, it's got to be 20 at least.
I've made 25 albums, but this is the 17th Cherish album. So very, very exciting. It's an album. It's called Heart of the Home. And very, very excited to record it back in Ireland, back in County Clare. And very honored to be releasing it here around nationwide. And I think you're the first one here playing. It's really nice that it's coming to you. So thank you very much for playing it and always being a great fan and great friend of the music.
Well, I would say if we go back in our archives, too, there were many albums that I had the privilege through the radio program to launch.
But you certainly did.
But I want to go even back before... before 1985, I believe it was 85 when you established Cherish the Ladies.
Yes.
I'd like to go back before then to a time when, with my own stint over 25 years in the music business, some things stick out in my memory. Perhaps if I had to narrow it down to just the most memorable few, it didn't happen on stage at all. It actually was late nights after playing in the Jager House, or weddings, or some events. When, and my being innocent at the time, besides I had no way to get home, I was both on a lift, where we wound up in John O'Neill's house.
I remember it.
In Woodside.
In Woodside in Queens, yes.
Where, I was now wondering when the line of great traditional musicians who I honestly didn't know would stop coming through the door. It was like a conga line of entertainers and musicians who were actually there forming a session.
Now, yes.
You know, God bless people like your own mom, Helen, who's celebrating a huge birthday this week.
Yes, she is. Yes.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying to my dad, of course, yourself and my dad were great friends, Adrian, and we had such a vibrant music scene that I grew up in, and was very privileged to meet so many great musicians. New York was always such a hotbed for so many of the best. And not just, you know, in traditional circles, but also playing for weddings and dances. And
yeah.
Everybody was always, it was a great close-knit friendship, and everybody was great pals, and always a ball to run into anybody. And those late-night parties, and John O'Neill being from Labasheed in County Clare.
Oh, yes.
He loved the music, and even up to right before he passed away, you know, John was sending me music, little pieces of music that he thought I would like, and he was still learning tunes. He had me write a tune out that my father played that he wanted to learn. So he was still learning up to the very end.
And, you know, but going back to Clare, where you just, you know, returned from yourself, musicians galore. Yeah, of course, you had John O'Neill, you had your dad, you had Joe Cunningham, another band leader and and a music teacher. You had so many of the musicians from Clare. Now, I have to tell you that there was, especially places like the Jaeger House, where, well, it is the Jaeger House, but we never called it.
Yeah, the Jaeger House, yes.
Jaeger House.
The Trocadero and all those.
Well, just we had an endless list of those. But we had the feeling, though, that their composers, arrangers, musicians, even singers, felt that their kind of music that they're playing was in a special category. Obviously, they would imagine that they were the best ever. But they also had, there was a Clare style of music.
Well, I mean, you know yourself, so many of the musicians came from, you know, in New York, that were the influential ones, came from the west of Ireland, I guess, which were hardest hit by, you know, the tough times. So many of the West was always the best, as far as I was concerned, when it came to Irish traditional music. So you had so many great musicians from Galway and Clare and Sligo, Mayo, up in Donegal, up and down, and Kerry along the coast. You know, whether it be Paddy Killoran or, you know, had Martin Mulhare and all his music and, you know, just great, great musicians, Michael Coleman, all the great traditional musicians from Sligo that emigrated. But that's what created this incredible music, you know, musicians, the dynasty that's been passed down to the people of playing music and the teachers that have passed the music down. And the people who loved the music, loved to dance, and loved to, you know, socialize through the music.
Yeah.
And that's where so many people, maybe lifelong friends, you know, heading up to the Catskills or traveling wherever we went. You know, the music always brought people together. You know, through the camaraderie and the fun and the music and the song and the dancing. You know, it created home, and everybody loved it.
Now, your mom, Helen. She is from, of course, Milton Malbay in County Clare. And just for sheer curiosity, we know she was a tremendous hostess. You know that she and the Beatrice O'Neills and many others who, you know, had the same fortune at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning after the musicians would wind up playing gigs. Did your mom, did her family, were they a musical family?
Well, my mother and her family, they loved to do set dancing. And my grandmother's first cousin would be the great Joe Ryan, who was one of the finest fiddle players that ever left. He played with the Castle Cayley Band with James Keane.
Oh, my God, yes.
And of course, they loved their music. I loved Milton, of course. Oh, Mom, what's a cricket? A cricket in the house. I got them. Yeah, we had great music and house parties, and John O'Malley, Martin, they was very involved with the Irish American, the society here, the guy that used to run all the sessions.
Yes.
John O'Malley and Jack Whalen and all these wonderful people that came from, you know, home of traditional Irish music and kept the music alive in here, kicking here in New York. But that's what she didn't have any musicians, but there was music in the family, but mainly they loved to do their set dancing. My most of the music for me came from my father, of course.
Yes.
I was so lucky to get to hear it growing up, and all his wonderful friends, and Jack Cohn and Mike Rafferty and Mike Preston, and so many great musicians that were frequented around that I was so fortunate to grow up listening to. So I really had an extra edge when it came to learning music.
By the way, my reference there to Claire, musicians having, you know, their own corner of and style of music. That could pretty much, apply to, you know, several other areas of Ireland, too. You're just coming from Portumna.
Yes.
Obviously there was a lot of music in his house. But
yes.
On the stories that you've heard, say, from your mom's side there where dancing and, was extraordinarily popular and a sense of great pride, say, in Clare and in her section of Clare, Milltown Mather.
Yes.
On your dad's side, stories of music, musicians, and not the professional musicians, but the his growing up in that area. Was there much difference, say, did you pick up that perhaps where your mom, where your dad came from, was pretty much the same and could be categorized under, you know, traditional Irish music and the love for same?
Oh, yeah. Well, my father came from East Galway, very, very well known for fantastic musicians. Only about an hour and 10 minutes from where my mother came from, so very close in proximity. And the music is very similar between East Galway and Clare. With my father, again, you know, we were so lucky having tape recorders and, records and get to hear all those when they were learning the music. You know, they'd have to go to go to a marquee and wait till they heard a nice tune, him and his friend.
Yeah.
And they would wait till they heard a tune that they liked, and my father would head off in one direction to learn the first part of the tune, and his friend would go off another direction to learn his part of the tune, and they'd meet the next day to teach each other, and that's how they learned music. We had so many advantages, you know, through,
sure.
you know,
yeah.
modern technology of learning music, which is amazing how much the music survived. But I think back then, because, you know, you learned from just your neighbors, it really was a real unique sound, where nowadays I think it's all kind of watered down together and pushed in together because everybody's learning and has the capabilities of learning from other people.
Yeah.
But, you know, what's great now is the fantastic music scene we have in New York. I remember my father saying to me in the 70s he thought that the music was going to die in New York, and it's thriving to high heaven, and so many wonderful teachers and great music coming out of so many young people here, and we're in such a great place and such proud teachers and parents and family that support the music and the kids that are really doing so well. I've got to teach. I can't teach because of my touring schedule with Cherish the Ladies, but I always help out any kids that I can. So usually I'll get some kid that's polished, very good player, and I'll just tweak them and just get them over the finish line. But I've had 3 kids now win All-Irelands that I've helped out so far. So when I was the first All-Ireland champion whistle player that ever came out of America, now there's a whole pile of them because the teachers are there, you know, to help.
You know, of course... there are, and a lot of it has to do with keeping the tradition alive as well. Now, your father, Joe, he was an All-Ireland champion accordion player. Was that
yes.
before he came here, or...?
Yes, yeah, just before he came here. He won in 57, and he came out here in 59. So, but he won the All-Ireland,
59, as I did. That was the year I came here as well.
That was your. It was a good year for New York.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, your own introduction to Ireland as a musician, as you know, on the tin whistle and the flute. Did you feel that you're not necessarily you? But that there might have been some sort of resentment that, you know, these Narvaks, these Yankee girls, boys were coming from, you know, to take over the and to in many cases walk away with the you know, with the prizes in the international contest there, singers, dancers, for instance. Many, you know, musicians from here went over, and in fact, did America proud, did Irish America proud, you know, with their performances.
Well, I think, you know, I mean, for me, I was thrilled, you know, when I won my first All Ireland, was on the whistle and the flute the same year. But for me, it was just great to bring the cup back to America. But I, you know, they used to say if you're going to win from America, you had to be that much better. You know, it couldn't move down between two because. You know, as I said, I was the first one to bring the cup back to America, which for me was a great because we had great fiddle players. We never had a whistle player do it, so that was a great thing for me to accomplish. But you know, when going to Ireland for me was a wonderful experience because it really improved my playing immensely. Because I got to hear the young kids and I got to hear what they were at, and it really opened my eyes to how good, you know, you could be. So for me, it was a wonderful experience, and I got to meet a lot of the great players that when I was competing against them, we're still great friends now. 30 years later, we're still great pals that we used to compete against each other. But I mean, right, you know, maybe in the early days it was kind of like you had a Liz Carroll or you had a you know, Brian Conway run or a Kathleen Collins in the early, you know, the 60s. But it was very once in a blue moon did an American win, and now it's pretty much a common occurrence. And then of course that transversed over to the dancing side as well. And we know now we just have we have Molly O'Riordan singing on the new Heart of the Home album. And she is the first American to win the All-Ireland singing in traditional singing. That's the first American ever to win the All-Ireland. So she is coming from Tappan, New York. And her grandfather was a lovely singer, very involved with the Cork Club, you know, the Tom O'Riordan. And here she is now his granddaughter. So that's just great to see. She's the first, you know, to knock down that barrier. But now that she's the first, she won't be the last, you know, because the kids that are coming up are just incredible. So it's in a great place, Adrian, as you know yourself.
Absolutely. And let's add to that another yet a very prestigious award, which you're about to receive. You're getting the 2018 Eugene O'Neill Award, and that is, you know, you as the champion of traditional Irish music, a performer, a composer, you know, it's a great award, and I'm sure that, you know, your mother and your siblings will find place in the wall for yet one more. But this is a very special one, actually.
I am kind of bowled over by it all. You know, it's just incredible, especially when I see the people that have won it previously. I'm just so over the moon to be included in that incredible lineup of people and talented individuals, the whole household names, and like to be able to go on the wall with Judy Collins, I mean, and Phil Donahue's coming, you know. It's just amazing. And, you know, all these accolades are lovely to do what you do, but I just do what I do because I love what I do. And, you know, I have a great bunch of girls with me and men who come on the road and travel. Yeah. And we go all over the world. And you know, I remember when I quit college, my father was having a heart attack that I wanted to be a musician. He said, "Yeah, to your mind, you'll be in the Bowery," you know. And because at that time, there wasn't really a tune. There was nobody really out there doing it, you know, but kind of paved my own road as far as keeping the band going. And we've always been very much purists and sticking to the traditional music, that we write tunes and then stick to the traditional idiom so that it sounds like, to me, the best compliment is when somebody tells me that a tune sounds like it's a couple hundred years old. To me, that's the greatest compliment that anybody could say. So, I'm honored as hell, as you can imagine. But it's just a wonderful thing. But I just do this because I love to do it, and I love to see our music getting to the better performing arts centers and playing with symphonies and seeing our traditional music raised up to the same caliber around the world. Music's where I think it should be heralded. And I'm just happy to be, one of the instruments that's bringing this forth. So I'll just keep doing what we're doing, but it's been an incredible ride. The band is now in our 34th year, and never in a million years did I ever think that would happen. But it's only because people support us and the fans listen to the music and buy the records and come out to the concerts. And, you could have the greatest band in the world, but if you didn't have the people coming out to listen and support you, you'd be nothing. So it's just, for me, it's a beautiful thing. But I'm having a ball running, organizing folk cruises, traditional music cruises.
Yeah.
And to see so many people coming to those things, it's just wonderful. It's wonderful. And to see again, that there is a market for people who love traditional music. And I think when it comes to Ireland, when you rate it up there with the world musics and the world cultures around the world, the music that comes out of the Irish people is just incredible. The level of virtuosity is second to none, and so many fans from every walk of life, and country music fans. I met Johnny Cash, and he just told me he adored Irish music. We got to record with, Don Henley from the Eagles, we met George Harrison from the Beatles. All these people, they love Irish music, and it's no wonder, because it's beautiful music. It's beautiful, heartfelt music that comes from deep down in the soul, and it touches people. So when you get the chance to do that, it's just a beautiful thing to be a part of.
You're again working with and being invited, to join some of the internationally renowned, performers. Not necessarily from the gamut, from the genre, across the genre. It's got to be great. I mean, when you get that call, from, the Chieftains, we could imagine that would be a perfect hit. But what about some of your other, you had mentioned there the symphonies and the orchestras. That must have been like an eye-opener or an ear-opener when you get a call and say, my God, this is great.
Well, I have to be honest with you. The first phone call came from the Boston Pops. And Adrian, I thought somebody was pulling my leg, and I hung up on the man. I thought he was joking me. Thank God he called back, and we became very good friends laughing over it. Our first symphony that we ever worked with was the Boston Pops. And what had happened was, we wound up getting booked, I thought, for a cocktail hour for a Chinese wedding. A Chinese wedding where nobody spoke English.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought we were playing the cocktail hour. And let me tell you how it happened. The breakdown in communication was so bad that we actually were booked to play for the reception. So we had to play instead of the cocktail hour. We wound up playing 5 hours after the cocktail hour. And we couldn't, we weren't prepared for that. We didn't have the material. So I taught the Chinese people the Siege of Venice, and we did the Siege of Venice over and over and over and over again. But it wound up that the principal violinist with the Boston Symphony Orchestra was at that wedding, and she had a ball. And the band was ready to kill me, given if you saw the evil eyes that I was getting playing for this Chinese wedding for 5 hours. And yourself, when you're trying to play material when your material doesn't work for the crowd. But that's what happened. She saw us at the wedding and recommended us. She thought we were fantastic musicians, and we did our first symphony, and it went down so well. We wound up doing 6 shows with them the first year, and then we recorded an album, which was nominated for a Grammy for Best Classical Crossover. But we didn't win it, but we got close. But now we've now become the most successful symphony, Celtic symphony pops act in the world, because we've done over 300 nights of symphony, which, I mean, again, there's people in the band that don't even know a dot from a rest, from a 6/8, from a 4/4. But, you know, and again, we go and we do these symphonies, the major symphonies all over the world, and they love Irish music. They love the music. And it's great to see, again, our music being up there, being played with, you know, the likes of Tchaikovsky and you know, Beethoven, you name it. But they're playing our music, and they really, really enjoy it. And whenever we do a symphony, we get asked back because the orchestra enjoys it so much, and the audiences.
That this is a great story. But let me ask you about your constant urge, which apparently you can't really shake, that you and indeed a lot of your colleagues and artists in Cherish the Ladies through the years. It's this urge to compose yet, you know, another tune, and something that is in there that won't let you say, okay, you know something, that's enough. I've been there, done that. That never goes away, does it?
No, well, for me, you know, I mean, I know lots of composers that they treat it like a job. Like, they'll get up at 9 to 5, they write.
Yeah.
With me, I'll be driving down the road and a melody comes into my head, and I just take out a little recorder that I have on the phone, and I sing into the phone. But it's just, for me, a tune comes to me. It's like a flash, a lightning flasher. I write most of my tunes within 5 minutes. They're done. It just comes to me. I only write when I'm inspired. Something inspires me. It's amazing to have so many great musicians now recording my music that I've written, and see people loving it so much. I wrote a tune called "The Ways to Kill Key," and it's the most popular tune right now on Midwest Radio, over in Mayo. Some priest has recorded it, and they're playing it over and over and over again, and everybody and their mother's calling me. And that is the nicest thing to hear when somebody else plays a piece of your music. We actually recorded a song on Heart of the Home called "A Shadow of Singer and His Song," and it's a song written by both our dear friends, Mr. Dermot Henry, and it's a song I've loved, you know, so many years. That Dermot wrote it probably in the 70s.
Yeah,
we redid it, and Dermot came over to my house one night, and I put it on in the background. Now, we gave it a more folky feel than when he recorded it. Yes. Dermot O'Brien was the producer, and it was kind of big string section and a big sound. We brought it back to fit folky, and Dermot was sitting at my kitchen table, and I was playing the songs off the record, and I was playing his song, and he didn't even know it was his until the chorus came around, and he nearly dropped dead.
here's a little taste of that song, and again, Dermot Henry, one of the greatest entertainers.
Period.
Yeah, period. Full stop.
To the spring of 69, 18 summers I've seen, and you took them in its prime. School I'd never seen to do. I thought I'd sing a song or two. So I said goodbye to learning, and I left it all behind. I bought myself an old guitar. I dreamt I'd be a superstar. So I signed up with an agent, and he made my dreams come true. I was swimming with the tide. People knew me nationwide, and far off hills were always green, and the skies were always blue. Sailing on my ship of dreams, I caught the sun rising just for me. And still I often thought of closing all the doors, but the minstrel man would always long for more. shadow of a singer and his song still follows me.
What a fabulous, fabulous song. And of course, we could play any of the tracks from your brand new CD called Heart of the Home, but it's just being launched. Tell us a little bit about the title track, Heart of the Home.
Well, yeah, it's actually, there's a wonderful singer-songwriter by the name of Andy M. Stewart, and Andy is from Scotland, fantastic singer, and the last time he came out, he actually had stenosis of the spine, and Mary Coogan, our guitar player, her husband, was very dear friends, and we were over playing the Glasgow Royal Concert Hall. We had a sold-out show, 2,500 people, and they went and got Andy out of the hospital and brought him to our concert, and that was the last concert he saw before he passed away. But I went up to pay my respect to him because he couldn't come down. He was in a wheelchair, and he said, Joni, he said, I wrote... because he was so on, we recorded his song with Vince Gill singing a song called Donegal Rain, and he cried his eyes out when he heard Vince Gill singing his song on our album. But he said, I have another song, it's called Heart of the Home, and you should be doing that one. It'd be perfect for Cherish. So we wound up doing it, and we invited our great friend Nathan Carter. Many of your listeners will probably maybe heard of him, maybe not, but he is... He's the top entertainer in Ireland at the moment. He's incredible. He's selling out thousands of theaters every night.
Oh, I know, And I tell you, if you were anywhere in Ireland today and, you express shock that you didn't know him, it would be a sign of pure ignorance. Let's take a little bit of this. Okay, the title track.
Heart of the Home.
Heart of the Home. My guest, Joni Madden.
He still smiles when he recalls how the gold ring fit her finger, and they made that moment linger, that in memory be strong. They had made a brand new start, found a whole new way of living. Two voices joined together, singing old sad songs. When the hard times come around, may you see them through together. Let there be love and laughter in the heart of your home. And in life's darkest day, while you sail through stormy waters, let there be love and laughter in the heart of your home.
Taste there of the title track from the new album number 17 of Cherish the Ladies. Let me double back to a time when you, first of all, I remember those early days. I remember where you were breaking into the scene. Remember we were delighted to welcome you into our St. Patrick's Day programs at the time.
I remember very, very well. Many, many, many years ago, Adrian, you were one of the first to ever have me on the radio. So but, I thank you so much for all those great, great breaks you gave to me, and not just to me, but to you always saw the upcoming talent, and yourself and Anya were always great, and really getting the most interesting people to come on your program.
All right. Now, this is why I'm on radio. Oh, God. Will you stop? You cut me off in the middle of the sentence.
I remember you asking me about, could I come on the radio with you back in the on the St. Patrick's Day program. Yes.
I distinctly remember those early days. And I remember your dad, Joe, there was John Joe Murray, Jim Coogan, of course.
Yes.
All who were not that close behind, but they would, while all of you were performing, that is a picture that still lives in my memory. You know, they were...
All the dads.
The Jads, and they were...
Well, yeah, there was more Maddie Conley. There's so many more.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Maddie Conley and Deirdre and, you know, Mike Rafferty and Mary Rafferty and, and of course, Mary Coogan and my dad and our dads. You know, when we used to make a record, Adrian, we used to always be, we'd be so afraid, we would be more afraid what our fathers would think of the album than what the New York Times music critic would think. You know, it was very important us to have their approval.
And then there were people like, you know, Margie Mulvihill, who's still...
Oh, yeah.
And so many others, you know.
Yes.
And then we get in trouble if we start to list them all.
But oh, yeah.
But what about those who said, you know, geez, those are those fathers now pushing those kids into, you know, into music and probably, you know, the insinuation was maybe it was overbearing. And as some would interpret that, youngster would want to enter the flesh at all unless their parents were there pushing them by the scruff of the neck.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, my father was the complete opposite. He didn't want me to compete in any. He didn't want me to have anything to do with the country competitions. And he thought music was fantastic, but music was a thing you would do on the weekends. You got your 9-to-5 job, and you do your music on the weekends, and that's how you get ahead. And that's what I did, and that's what you should do. And I kind of got the bug early on, and I wanted to do this, and I went to college to be an accountant, and I just said, no, this is not going to work for me. It was because at the time, it was kind of it was crazy, Adrian, to be quitting school to be going into music, but. I remember him just saying to me when he saw me, well, by Christ, you're not going hungry yet by the looks of you. So,
listen, I want to play in the background here. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about, you know, a very special track on this new album. It's the Portumna Workhouse.
Yes, I wrote them for him that he could be playing in the background, sure. And then, of course, Portumna is known for its hurling, and my grandfathers and my fathers and my great uncles were all great hurlers, so I wrote a tune for the hurling boys, so the hurling boys of Portumna. But, it's just been a great thing. But I don't, you know, the parents, and it's great. Listen, if the kids don't get a little pushed, for me, I didn't need to push. Once I found the instrument that I wanted to play, I was addicted to it, and I couldn't wait to play. I think it's very important for parents to let kids pick what they want to do themselves. You know, don't push them into an instrument. But I do think kids need some encouragement. But either they're going to do it or they're not. You can't really force a kid to play music or not. But any of the kids that play, they're never sorry that they got pushed. Then when you see them now and the great friendships you make through lifelong friendships through music and the great times you can have, and there's nothing better than to be able to sit down and play a tune. It doesn't matter how good you are. There's great enjoyment. I'm teaching. I have people come to start learning at 60 or 65. I've had people start playing. And they're great little players now. They always wanted to play all their lives. You're never too old for music. That's what I think it's wonderful. But I did write a tune there on the album. It's called Farewell to the Catskills. And we've all gone up to the Catskills. But I wrote a tune leaving the Catskill Mountains after they have this wonderful arts week that goes on up there now in the summer. We'll be up again there next summer, where they had about 500 students come from all over, and they learned from the best in the music. And it's great to see that place alive for that week, the great music that's coming out of it. But I wrote this tune leaving the mountain. I called it Farewell to the Catskills, if you wanted a tune in the background. It's a nice little one.
Thank you.
Tony, you know, I know we should be talking, but I'm fascinated by this. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners are too, not just with the composition for the song itself and the great lilt, but for many, East Durham, the Catskills, if as babies, as kids, that was, you know, aptly called the 33rd county of Ireland. And sometimes when we talk about the Catskills, and you know, many might think that this was something akin to the Jewish Catskills and all the you know, the very famous places that gave breaks to entertainers and musicians. But as far back as we can remember, and I'm sure you wound up there in diapers yourself. You're one of seven in the family.
I'm one of seven, yes.
You're the second eldest. It was very, in hindsight, if you were now to say this was a fabulous place, you went up, there was no air conditioning, there was, you know, but, and there was regular...
Basic.
It was basic. Great home-cooked food. And on a regular, you know, you had certain hours that you would be there. But somehow it was a brand new experience every day in looking forward to music and looking to dancing. And you know, long before the expression bar hopping became popular, that was house hopping up there from from one place to the other, and it was a lifestyle very much a part of the Irish American
experience.
You had Rockaway and you had the Catskills. There were many other places, but if you weren't in Rockaway Beach, then the chances are you would wind up in the Catskills. Both areas, and I'm sure now I'm making a lot of new enemies, say you should have mentioned the top 20, but those two in particular stood out, and that's where you would find the you know, the dads, and in fact of musicians, and a lot of times and the moms, and a great atmosphere.
Oh, I mean, how many people do you meet who met their husbands or wives up there? The whole social scene, the whole, it was just, you know, you got in the car, you threw the kids into the station wagon, and you head to the mountains, and you got the hell out of the city for a week or a weekend or a couple of, you know, a week, whatever. And, but again, you know, you could run free and run wild, and then the great music that was in all the places and all the venues, and as you said, great bar hopping, and you weren't really bar hopping. You were going, what band was, you were going to hear all the bands. It
right.
was more like band hopping.
then it would be, you could see, you know, a degree of frustration because the you know, two of your favorite bands, one was playing, you were listening to it, but you're aware, have an awareness that you're missing out on the other band. I think many people today would wonder, well, wait a minute, what was, you know, couldn't they do, you know, couldn't they settle for one? No, we couldn't. We had to go from place to place and catch some of the band.
And that was, everybody had a ball. Everybody had a ball.
Yeah.
I mean, it was legalized too much fun between the music and the dancing. And again, I've made lifelong friends. I used to meet people from Brooklyn and the Bronx. I used to go out to Rockaway and out to Breezy Point when I was a kid there as well.
Right.
When we were trying to raise money with the Tara Cayley Band, we'd go out there every Sunday and play out there and raise money. And we had great times out there. And, you know, all great memories, all those wonderful places. You know, unfortunately, I think the Catskills aren't doing it like unfortunately, they didn't keep up with the times, and a lot of people now go to other places, but there's still fantastic weekends up there, including that week now, the Irish Arts Center, that will be up there in July for the for their 25th anniversary. And, you know, it's always, but I have everybody, you bring up the Catskills, everybody has a soft spot for it or a nostalgia that, you know, it's hard not to visit back with the great times we had up there.
You know, again in the background, we're listening to one of the tracks from your album. Just tell us a little bit about it.
I don't know, I can't hear it.
Oh, can you hear it now? Okay, it's Prince of Speakers, The Fly.
Oh, this is Marilla Murray, our accordion player, and these are two hornpipes from the 1800s that she put together, and I think they're lovely.
5 minutes. Okay, as we get a taste there of the music from album number 17, Cherish the Ladies, Joni's new album, again, I want to, remind everybody that because of technology and the new day that's in it, you don't have to go trekking to a shop to buy new CDs anymore. But I would say that still the custom of, coming out from a concert, and you have a slew of them coming up now, your fall winter concert, will be taking you from Fairfield, Connecticut, starting in the middle of December. And you keep going right through the end of March. That's got to be a pretty taking everywhere across the United States. This has got to be somebody.
Yeah, and there's a lot more gigs have come in since that has been issued. So we're busy. You know, we do a wonderful Christmas tour. I absolutely love doing it. We've been doing it now maybe 10 or 12 years. And, you know, I've just got word already. We're sold out for Tarrytown Music Hall, 900-seater. We just keep adding dates. They sell out. But we recorded three Christmas albums down through the years, and we really spent a lot of time arranging and putting the music together, and a lot of thought has gone into it. And I couldn't believe we made our first Christmas album, and it was actually listed by the New York Times as one of the top 10 Christmas albums of the year. So that kind of stuff coming out of when we recorded in my house, you know.
Yeah.
And now we've made three, so we're heading off. That'll be 18 cities there in December, and then over to Glasgow and Scotland and Ireland again, back to the Celtic Connections Festival, and a couple of dates in Ireland again, and then February and March. We're traveling all around, and there's a very good possibility our April will be packed as well. We're just waiting to confirm another amazing thing that might be coming our way. But, we'll keep going as long as the phone keeps ringing, Adrian, and obviously people like what we do. It's always been, I'm so lucky. I have such the greatest bunch of girls travel with me, and each one of them is a stellar musician and incredible person for the road that joins me, Mary Coogan, with me almost 34 years now, and Marilla Murray on accordion, another All-Ireland champion, and Nella Casey, All-Ireland champion on the fiddle, Kathleen Boyle, All-Ireland champion on the piano, and our Christmas tour, we have Don Stiff singing the songs with us, and then February, March, we have a fantastic singer from Clare, Kate Purcell, coming out to join us on the tour. So we're just knocking things out of the park, and we, of course, we always have our dancers. And we have David Gainey, 5-time world champion, with us. I have Seamus of Florida, who's won 5 All-Ireland championships, including an incredible dancer and singer. And last but not least, then we have a wonderful dancer from Canada, Canadian step dancing champion. So I'm only as good as the spokes on the wheel, and having only the best that's joined me on the stage. I'm very lucky. So, you know.
Anyway, let me tell you. The Eugene O'Neill Award honor that you're going to get actually on Monday,
November 12th,
and it's at the Manhattan Club upstairs at Rosie O'Grady's 52nd and 7th Avenue. That's going to be terrific. That really is. You know,
yes, it'll be a great night. Lots of great friends and musicians coming, and And if anybody wants to go, they can still find out about it. I hope they do join us. Yeah, but it's the Irish American Artists and Writers Association. So I'm just very, very honored to be and to be that. And I've got to see you at so many events and to see you honored us too, Adrian. So thank you for your lifetime of commitment to the airways and for keeping people so informed. From everything from music to politics to the arts, you've been a beacon of so thank you for everything you've done.
Thank you. And don't think that I don't have a nib on me, that my name, that I don't have a street up on the concourse, you know, named after me. Who would believe that on the concourse, you know, that is the Broadway of New York. It is the most significant and recognizable avenue with a huge history of not only Irish America but of multi-ethnic groups. There is a sign, a street sign. Listen to this one. It says, Joni Madden and Cherish the Ladies. My God. How many, you know, that's a traffic hazard. Can you imagine somebody minding their own business coming down and say, Jesus, did I just see that? Well, you would have seen it, and it's great. To your family, and especially to birthday, yeah, I won't mention it because I don't mention which one it is unless she's been...
Oh, she's 80. I'm telling everybody. Oh. My mother's 80, and I'll tell you what, if I'm half as good as her, at 60, I'll be thrilled. She just told me, watch my mouth.
That's it. And, you know, when she says, watch your mouth, she actually, that's one step short of wash your mouth. So let's leave a go on that one, okay? Joni, thanks for spending this time with us. And again, to you and Cherish the Ladies and to so many millions at this stage of the game of people that you have and Cherish the Ladies have done over this now 33 past years. Good luck to you. It must be great, and I know something about this, is to find something you love to do and then, you know, get to do it.
Thank you, Adrian. Thank you to you and Anya for all the great years of friendship and for all you do. I appreciate it. Thank you for taking the time to let your fans and your friends listen to and to let them know about our new album. Thank you again.
Thanks again.